Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to check out our site. We also encourage you to check out our guests' websites. We link to them. That's also there at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, as well as on the schedules page of those guests who are upcoming. And we encourage you to find what works for you, what resonates with you. Very interesting group of people that I've come across in the last few years. Matter of fact, I met with a woman not too long ago who shared the most incredible story with me about how the best is yet to come. Yes, there are certain, we might say, apocalyptic types of events that are coming, but not in the same context that you might think. And that, you know, we're just about through it all, and the better days are coming, if you will. Maybe 2016 is the that transition year. Who knows? All I can do is talk to my guests and ask them. And of course, 9 times out of 10, those changes come about because of things that you do in your life. Ergo, why we're going to be talking today to you about the big book of you. That's right, the big book of you. It's a compelling and moving, unique yet timeless book that Jennifer McLean offers. She is my guest, the author of the book. She offers principles and ideas that will fundamentally change how you look at your life. And it is simply, it's a beautiful book, and we encourage you to read it and be transformed. We encourage you to check it out. Again, it is called The Big Book of You, Spiritual Principles for Creating Your Life and Accepting What Is. Oh, now there, come on. Jennifer, are you serious? And accept just what is? I want things to change. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard. It's an honor to be here and play with you today.
It's interesting that you have that little element at the end there and accept things as they are, if you will. And I remember an experience some time ago. I was sort of contemplating this whole aspect of dualism and, you know, the things in life, the challenges or the bad things, the negative things, whatever other judgmental words you want to use to categorize those types of things. And I said, okay, I'm just, those events, they're not bad. They're not challenges. They're not traumatic. They're not this. They just are. They just are. They're neutral. All right. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, and that's going to help me to get through those times when I see them as such, right? I pass judgment on them. Well, I had a small problem with that theory, because in order for that theory to work, I had to take the same position on the good, the wonderful, the beautiful, the exceptional events in my life that inspired and encouraged, et cetera, because you can't take the negative stuff and say, it just is, and then the positive stuff is great and it's exciting. As much, you've got to kind of take that same position. It's just what is.
Oh, that's such a great, oh my, great start to this conversation, Richard. Really cool, because this is something that I've been exploring a lot lately. And it truly is accepting all of it as just is. Now, the challenge is that we come from this place of, this is bad and this is good. That's the challenge of our life in this crazy world we live in. So we say, we name things, we label them. We say that over there, that's bad, and that over there, that's good. Now, what if that's not the case? What if both of them are just as they are, and both of them are just offering a different perspective, a different point of view that is guiding us in a different direction? Most of the people who listen to your show, they are looking for deeper answers. They're curious. Your audience is curious. And what I like to do now is I like to take that curiosity and hone it, and take that curiosity and look at it and just say, what if all of it is here for you? What if the labels that we apply that it's good or that it's bad is what if, again, just playing and experimenting here, and we take that away and just say, okay, that doesn't exist anymore. What if it's all of it is here for us? In fact, maybe even at the behest of our soul, maybe even our soul came down here to have this grand experiment, and that we are here to play full out. And part of the programming that we get to play with is, what if there's nothing broken and nothing wrong? And I know that can be a stretch for some of you. But let me tell you, when you start to play with that concept, your life actually transforms. My life has. The life of people who I coach have. That simple act of saying, what if it's all here for me? And you know that old saying, Richard, of, you know, God doesn't give you any more than you can handle?
Mm-hmm.
I actually like to say that the universe, which I believe is in partnership with divinity,
mm-hmm.
gives us exactly what we're ready for, mm-hmm. not more than we can handle. So it's not pressing us and compressing us to the point of breaking, but we know we won't break. It actually gives us exactly what we have the wherewithal, the mental capacity for, the emotional capacity for, at any given moment. I think that, I mean, from my worldview, when you have that, it gives you the most beautiful breath of relief that nothing is happening for, I'm not victimized, I'm not a victim here.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in what's occurring that's here for me. And therefore, the big, the bad, or the horrible, or the wonderful is all then along this same continuum. It's all here for us.
Hmm. So then help me to break this thing down.
Okay.
I have a great deal of difficulty, and I know I'm not alone,
mm-hmm.
with checking in on an hourly, even minute by minute for that matter, let alone daily basis, with the activities of the rest of humanity, whether
yeah.
you want to talk about social media or you want to talk about the news. And I had this conversation with a woman just the other day, and I expressed it this way. I said, why do I need to be reminded of man's inhumanity to man
mm-hmm.
when this has been going on since man has been here? I know these events are happening. I am not tuning into the news because I want to deny that these things are happening. I acknowledge that these things happen. But why do I need to, put it this way, feed myself that stuff?
Mm-hmm. It's actually a really important thing it's an important thing to decide and choose for yourself. There was a time when I actually couldn't be fed by the news in that way. I was traumatized by it regularly. So I decided to take a break from the news. I took a break for about 4 years, actually, from the news. And just in the last year, I've been just making a new choice. So we all have choices. And I believe part of the reason why I'm witnessing the news now is because I'm in a new place of capacity. Just like I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I have this capacity and this new discernment and perspective now that I can look at it all and start to see a pattern of change. So you know, playing, I like to play the what-if game. The what-if game allows me to start playing and experimenting with my life and more importantly, with my beliefs. So what if we've come to a point in our technology where that in no time in registered history have we as a global community been able to witness all the horrendous things that are happening on the planet? And what if there's a part of that media and what the media is feeding us, and I believe that in some cases the media is feeding us, what if that's part of it, that we are supposed to be looking at this and saying and making some choices from it? You know, what if that it's all here for us so that we can now look at it and say, you know what, that's not okay. And I am not saying to stand back and say, everything's fine, it's all good, it's all as it is. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying look at it from this perspective and say, what change can I make in my being to make a difference? I want to tell you a little story about this. It's actually in the big book of you. I had a lot of anger. I had, you know, had I came from a childhood that was very, very challenging, narcissistic. There was sexual abuse. There was alcoholism. And it was tough, and I spent a long time recovering. And I think that's why I became a healer and why I do the work I do now. And so I was driving along the street over in Huntington Beach, beautiful day, and there was a cyclist that was right beside me. And I had been exploring my own rage, my own anger, my own violence, that violent thoughts. I didn't have violent tendencies, but I did have violent thoughts, and I was noticing them. And in that moment, right beside me, the bicyclist crashed and fell over. It didn't have anything to do with traffic. He just fell over, and I was jolted by it. It was a violent moment, watching someone fall off a bike and run into something. And it turns out he was fine. He got up and brushed himself off and cycled away. But I wasn't fine, so I decided to pull off the road and explore this. And I have this meditative process that I do, and I went inside. And I asked the question of my own being in my own meditative state in almost a shamanic journey. And I said, tell me about my violence. And I was shown this image of the violent thoughts that I had were going out of me with little strings. And again, this is just a metaphor, I believe. But it was little strings of my energy, my thoughts around violence that went out and found a resonance on the planet where that violence could settle. So, and I saw several of these threads with little dots on the end of them move out into the Middle East. And I witnessed how my violent thoughts actually contributed somehow to the violence that was happening over there. And what I saw was then that all of these dots from all of our thoughts pixelated and almost became concrete in thought and consciousness over there. So that, you know, a lot of, you've probably talked to some guests that talk that we're all one, mm-hmm. that we're all definitely connected, and quantum physics is starting to prove that. And so I got to see that just my thoughts actually contributed to violence in the world. So what I got to know in that moment is that I can change my life. I can make new choices about me. I can start to heal me. And I can make a difference on the planet through the simple act of understanding where my beliefs came from, where my rage comes from, and heal that. And I have several different systems of healing called the Spontaneous Transformation Technique that I use now to support myself. That's where I started from. And now I support other people in helping us to resolve some of these old events that happen to them and the strange decisions we make and the emotions that fall out of them that actually impact everyone. I hope that wasn't too weird.
No, not at all. Well, not at all. As a matter of fact, it's interesting because it spurred a thought in me going back. Wow. I can't believe I'm going back 35 years. I was going through a personal growth. As a matter of fact, I'm seeing the images as I'm starting to share this. I was going through a personal growth program called LifeSpring. And it was similar to EST back in the late 70s and 80s. And I remember them sharing a concept like that. And I was in the car with someone, a member of the group, and feeling a little impatient that we weren't going fast. I wasn't driving either. And there was this car that came up from behind and was weaving in and out of freeway traffic. And I was just so annoyed by this whole thing. Again, I'm not driving. I'm a passenger. What difference does it make to me? And I think maybe we were pressed for time, needing to get back at a specific time to the center where the event, the workshop was being held. And we're still traveling along at a fairly good rate of speed. And about 2 minutes later, we come upon an automobile accident. Guess which car was involved?
Oh, wow.
And that, at that time, that hit me like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. As though, oh my gosh, did I do that? You know, and not even being humorous in terms of that one comedic television program, Urkel. Did I do that? No. this was very profound. I mean, I was 20 years of age. And having remembered what we were told about in one of the sessions, and here I am out on the highway, and here's this car piled over in the corner. Now, I don't know what the disposition, the final disposition was. All I know is that that made a very, very clear impact on me about what you just described.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, did you create that? I don't know. And does it matter? Probably not. You know, we live in a co-creative universe where our thoughts can influence others. But at the end of the day, what I'm really starting to understand, Richard, so clearly, is that the mechanism of our life is here to support us, always, even if it doesn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have been having the most amazing experiences of late. You know, a lot. I've been doing this work for a long time, but I'm really starting to feel it in my bones lately. And you might be experiencing that from your other guests and some of the comments from your viewers. Life is changing a little bit.
Uh-huh.
We're having new responses to the things that are happening in the world right now.
Yes.
I'm watching the things that show up. I had something recently happen that could have been devastating. It could have ruined my business completely. And instead, and it was with a group of people, and, you know, sometimes communities can be messy when we get a bunch of people with similar energies bumping into each other, right? It can
yeah.
be a little messy.
Yes, it can.
And we had an incident show up that was quite serious, and we were able to use these principles that I'm talking about right here to have a different conversation. And we all, without exception, started to realize that what had happened, which initially was devastating, was actually here for each of us. And the mechanisms of it, it was astonishing how each one of us got our piece out of it, our individual piece that came out of our backgrounds and the areas of our lives that we were ready to love and heal and honor. And every single person got a tiny little piece. You know, it reminded me of that old story parable of the nine blind men touching a different part of the elephant.
Yeah.
And describing something completely different. And yet that's exactly the situation, but we came together as a whole, and we each got to witness each other's transformation, the individual transformation,
yeah.
through this devastating event. And within 1 week, all of us were grateful it happened. Grateful it happened. And are using it to move into a new direction in our businesses. I do a lot of business coaching and healing for entrepreneurs, and it was astonishing. And all of us have had changes now in our business within that time frame, just from opening up. And part of it is about belief busting, right? It's
mm-hmm.
it's what we believe in the moment. When you brought up traffic, I had to giggle a little bit because that's my thing. I have huge beliefs about the other drivers on the road, always. I live in L.A., so driving in L.A. is fascinating. That's a very diplomatic way of saying it. And I've been a very assertive driver most of my life, and that creates interesting scenarios with middle fingers raised at me and me raising them back. And you know, I'm this spiritual guru kind of teacher. I'm not a guru. I'm this spiritual being who's having a journey that I share with a lot of people. And yet that's my place, that I do the most extraordinary healing because I'm always triggered when I go drive. So when you're talking about driving, and it's a wonderful place to play with belief busting for me personally, where I get to take a look at, okay, so what am I believing right now? And what is that creating for me? What are my beliefs creating? What are these subconscious beliefs creating? And I know that from my childhood, I created a ton of conclusions from what happened. That's what we do as children. Trauma, an event happens that's upsetting. We create a conclusion. It's usually about us, that we're not good enough, that there's something wrong with us, that we did something wrong. And then we settle that away into our body, into our energy, and then we spend a lot of the rest of our life creating situations that trigger that up so that we can heal it. That's my healing system, and that's the philosophy behind my healing work. And the beliefs are a great way to access some of the pieces that are running us unconsciously, that create these crazy things in our lives.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, please.
It's, you know, it is extraordinary that we come across these new and what we'll call them because we've only experienced them in this consciousness, if you will, for the first time, these unique paradigms that are so divergent from the social paradigms.
Yes.
And when I have shared some of these with people, of course, I'm thought of as naive, you know, if not a fool, and I'm willing to accept that. I remember it was in my 20s, early 20s, that I remember hearing for the first time the phrase, "It is better to be thought a fool than to open thy mouth and remove all doubt." Well, so much for that theory. I keep opening my mouth, and there you go. But at the same time, there's another one that says it is better to begin in doubt and end in certainty than begin with certainty and end in doubt.
Yes, that's brilliant. Yeah, because you know what that does? It, you know, what I see happen is people, when people establish an opinion, a very distinct point of view, they have now closed all the doors to any other possibilities. The Buddhists, I believe, they say that the greatest place of knowing is I don't know. The greatest place of being, of power, is that place of not knowing. Because there, all possibilities are available to us. And so the what-if game and the belief-busting game for me allows me to just, it allows me to have a new point of view, and at least temporarily. And that allows me to say, well, shoot, maybe the paradigm I've been living with all this time, that men are such and such and drivers are so-and-sos, maybe if I change that point of view, I could have a different experience. And lo and behold, that's what happens.
Well, and I have to tell you that there are times when I have those same thoughts and I say, nah, no, I'm right, you know. but I know that that's not true because, as we both would acknowledge, all of these other people are but reflections and expressions of self.
Absolutely.
And that's a hard one to forget about wrapping your brain around it. That's a hard one to wrap your heart around. It really is sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I've had a remarkable experience recently of, you know, my father was a sexual predator, and he passed away a year ago, April, and I was not unhappy. You know, that's a recent thing I'm sharing, that my sister had passed away 9 months before that, and she was my best friend, and I kind of blamed him because I was stronger, and we both went through this abuse, and she never quite recovered. And so I was quite angry with him when he left. And I recently had this powerful new understanding of him and even my mother. And I look at them now with this new angle of perception, with this new belief busting. Like, what if at that time, at that generation, it appeared that there weren't very many choices? What if the way that they were broken is in their childhood, I mean, we're all victims of victims, there is something more going on that I couldn't possibly understand, and then I made my own conclusions based on my situation that was harmful for myself and everyone else. And that may sound extreme, and for some of your viewers, you might think I'm delusional, but boy, the freedom I feel now and the capacity to now have compassion for so many more people, and what point of view are they coming from that is creating their decisions?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
What point of view did I have a hand in creating in that? What part of this is here for me? And, you know, I recognize I'm a teacher and a healer, and I recognize that most of us, including yourself, teachers, healers, radio personalities, we often have a life that we get to reflect to our viewers and our readers. We get to have experiences because we've chosen to stand up and share that allows us to have these, the perception is maybe rougher experiences, but from my perspective now, I get it. It's here because I have chosen to be of service and share my point of view and share what's happened to me so that others can maybe find peace. I mean, shoot, if I can find peace and happiness with the life I've had, you know, anyone can.
Yeah.
Crap.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the comedian Lewis Black.
Yes, I love him.
I love him,
fellow
too.
Fellow Canadian.
The
yeah,
man is probably more grounded than any of us in that respect because of his ability to release on stage.
Yes.
But I will quote from him, and I will say that that Jennifer, you are delusional, but it's okay. So am I, and we're in good company. and we will not get over it. Let's hope we don't. It's one of those things where I've always observed things from a different point of view.
Yeah.
And someone said, "Well, of course it's yours." Well, yeah, but the thing is it's always been a different point of view from the social point of view. And again, I will hear the phrases, "Oh, you're so naive. You know, you really need to grow up and you need to understand the way the world really works." Mm-hmm. And sort of shifting to a different subject, for example, when the conversation of the economy comes up, mm-hmm. I ask the question, why is it that it's this way? Who said that, A, this is the way and the only way that it will ever be, and two, why can we not consider some other concept? It's amazing to me the dialogue that I hear regarding, for example, traveling to other planets. You know, everybody's talking about going to Mars and colonizing and so forth and so on. And the first subject that comes up is what? The economy. Of a place we aren't even at yet. And it's like, wait a minute. So is there the same concept when one is breathing air? I don't think so. That's just a flat out exchange. And in the universe, that's all there is an exchange. It's not about crunching numbers and percents and points and the thing that always frustrated me with talking about the numbers was that no matter how good the numbers were, none of the people who were crunching them were happy. And so I would ask economists, all right, let's stop for a moment. I need you to answer this question for me. What numbers would make you happy? And you don't get an answer. And that's one of the things that is so, you know, I mean, that's just the way I look at stuff. It's like I'm asking these questions.
This is good. I mean, the questions, what you're doing, Richard, is you're asking questions that make us think about what our beliefs are. So our beliefs, we invented money. We invented it.
Yeah.
4,000 years ago, we said, well, we should probably create this thing that has a value that we'll use for exchange. We invented it. Then at some point in time, we then attached emotional meaning to it.
Mm-hmm.
We attached there's value of the currency, and then there's the emotional meaning of what we are against that currency. And it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It really
is. It's just crazy. So, you know, a couple things. The deepest compression yields the new results. You know, I mean, the metaphor of diamonds, right?
Okay. That's a great analogy.
Right? They're so beautiful because they've been compressed so profoundly over thousands of years. So what's happening in our economy right now is a powerful compression that will yield new results. Inventions happen because of compression, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurs create new products because they want something that will help them out of compression, how they're being compressed. Toilets were invented.
Mm-hmm.
Refrigerators were invented. All of these things come out of this. So
mm-hmm.
my point of view, again, is there's nothing going wrong here.
Yeah.
There's just an economy that is being compressed in a new way so that we can change it.
Yeah.
We invented money. The Federal Reserve is an illusion.
Yeah. Oh, well, and in a matter of speaking, all of this regarding the economy is an illusion because you say 4,000 years ago we decided, well, what were we doing before then? We were actually probably doing just fine, thank you very much.
Exactly.
And things were working well. And then the powers that be decided, you know what, we need to somehow maintain greater control and power over these. And of course, the institutions of several thousand years ago also did the same thing. The religious institutions.
The Nicene Council.
Yeah.
They changed the bottom. I mean, listen. But here's the wonderful part about mm-hmm. where we're at right now.
Yeah.
You, me, everyone who's listening is now the powers that be.
Yes.
I know that sounds weird, but we are. Okay, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Campbell's soup. just let go of seven non-organic chemicals from their soup and are now selling an organic line of Campbell's soup. Let go of a bunch of chemicals and is now selling organics. That's how powerful we are.
Well, and look at McDonald's. Although
McDonald's is not doing well.
Well, no, they're not. But they've decided, and apparently it's going to take them 2 years to do this. I'm thinking, really?
Yeah.
they're actually going to start using. I'm not even sure what the term is. I don't think it's organic, but they're going to start using humanely treated livestock. For their product.
Right?
And
look,
that's
how powerful we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how powerful we are. And when we individually decide that we are powerful,
mm-hmm.
when we individually decide that we are important, we can change this whole crazy world. I'll give you an example. 2008 was the start of the big turning point.
Yeah.
It was the turning point. That's the year I started my business. I made my first million in 2008. I'd never made $1 million in my life.
I'm
and
waiting.
I made my first million in that year.
I'm waiting.
well, you know, join me. I can help you. That's what I do. I help entrepreneurs figure out how to do this stuff. And part of it is not just, as I was saying, it's, you know, I worked in corporate America for many years as a brand strategist. So I got to see some really unique, in the tech industry, no less. So I got to see some really unique things, cycles that were happening that developed my own system of marketing and business. And then on top of that, I do healing work, which is really where a lot of the entrepreneurs find a lot of success, is when we start organizing, understanding our beliefs and how our discernments really create our businesses and our successes, and using compression as a powerful tool, not something that's against us. Wow, those things can change a lot. I'll give you one more example. There's this guy, I can't remember his name, I'm sorry, but during the Depression, he was the number one selling insurance salesman for 10 years straight. And he did that against all odds. Everyone else was saying you can't be successful during the Depression. He was the most successful insurance salesman in history, during the toughest time in history. And it was 100% because he saw, his beliefs were different about what was happening. He saw a way to support people, to help people. And how he did it, honestly, was just creating these wild luncheons in New York. And he would get together three people who he thought could support each other in their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he did. That's it. He got them together. He said, "I'd like you guys to meet each other. You're a buyer, you're a seller, you're an inventor. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to leave you." That's how he sold insurance.
Oh, wow.
He didn't do any selling. He just was of service. And I think that's another paradigm that we could talk about here, which is what I have found is the people that are most successful in this current economy, in this current world events and in what's happening right now, the people that come from a service-oriented perspective,
mm-hmm.
not a profit-oriented perspective, they do really, really, really well. And their creativity and innovation is way more expanded. It's really hard to have an expanded creativity and innovation when you're only talking about money.
I couldn't agree more. We're going to talk more about that. I definitely want to pursue that as we continue talking with Jennifer McLean. She is the author of a lot of different things, including the big book of You, Spiritual Principles for Creating Your Life and Accepting What Is. And that's a tall order, but it is not unfulfillable. You definitely can do that. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with Jennifer McLean. She is the author of the one particular item that we're looking at, the Big Book of You. We're also talking about, just a ton of other things as well. And one of the things that I definitely want to jump into, Jennifer, because I think this ties in, we have talked on numerous occasions. We've even had I guess you might call him the executive producer of the film Thrive, the movement, using that word in particular. I'm 55 years of age. My father is 84. He's lived nearly twice as long as I have, And I'm basically tired of the way things are. Now, that's contrary to the second half of your subtitle, accepting things as they are, or accept what is. But at the same time, I guess we might want to talk about how do you juxtapose the acceptance of what is and at the same time desire a life that is not just sustainable, but that allows us to do just that, to thrive instead of just survive, which is what the majority of us on this planet are doing today.
Yeah, really great point. Surviving is what many of us are doing, and there is a new paradigm of thriving. And how do we use desire? I actually have a little exercise that I think will illustrate the point more than words. Do you mind if I walk you through a little exercise?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Okay, that'd be great. So right now, Richard, are you okay being my guinea pig?
Sure. Why not?
Okay, so think of something that you really want, that you really desire. You know, I mean, you know, you said $1 million. Right?
All right.
So whatever it is, do you want to choose $1 million?
I will go with that, yes.
Okay, let's do that. All right, so, and your audience, as you're listening now, just choose something that you really, really want. I'm gonna walk Richard through this, and you can go through it using your words and your descriptions. So what would that feel like in your body, in your field? What would that feel like?
I'd feel a lot lighter. I wouldn't feel as though I was under pressure, you know, to meet the bills every month, okay. Be able to do a few things that my wife and I would like to do, you know, maybe go out to dinner without even thinking about the check, you know.
Great. Okay. So allow that to kind of just feel in. So
yeah.
You're feeling lighter, less pressure. You could do more things. You could go out and do things without that pressure. So
mm-hmm.
feel that. Now,
mm-hmm.
what would that be like for you? What would that feel like if you could do all this stuff with less pressure? What would that be like?
That'd be fantastic. I'd feel
Describe
incredible.
That.
Yeah.
Describe it in your bones.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, as I say, there's a much lighter feel. There's a more energy, more exuberance, even a greater desire to assist and, as you've said before, to serve others with the talents and abilities that I have to help them to get their message out in the ways in which they want.
Awesome. So feel that now. You've got this lighter energy. There's more exuberance. There's
mm-hmm.
this desire that's opening up to serve and help others. Feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Feel that as if it's like circulating through you. And now describe to me, what does that feel like? As that lighter energy, exuberance, desire to serve, what does that feel like?
It feels great.
Yeah, so describe
that. Yeah,
describe what your body feels like, what your emotions feel like.
I feel looser. I think that I feel less stressed, maybe even I'm seeing my blood pressure without medication staying where it's supposed
Good.
To be in the normal range. More laughter, you know, more joy in living and doing things from day to day and meeting people and connecting with folks and again, you know, again, being of in that place of service that helps them. I mean, again, our program is giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true.
Yeah. And now feel the different paradigm within which you're playing, though. I mean, your show already
mm-hmm.
does that.
Mm-hmm.
But you are now right now in a new energy, and so is your audience. I don't know if you can feel that, but
mm-hmm.
everyone is in a new energy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy is actually the energy of manifestation, is actually the energy of creation itself. That, and we kind of have it backwards. We think we have to figure things out. We think that our desires are maybe not okay, or that how do we accept what is and still have a desire for more? Well, when we're in this place, when we can actually use the desire to dig deeper and deeper and deeper into understanding the emotional piece, the feeling piece, the piece of relief, really is what we're looking for. Because in this field of relief that you're in right now, we're in that place that the Buddhists say, there's freedom of possibility now open. Does that feel true?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That there's way more possibilities open, and there's way more choices. When we get into a rut of can't, and this is pressure, and it's not going to happen, it hasn't happened, we are now in a place where it feels like we don't have a choice. And when we don't have a choice, it's like we are in a cage. So the opportunity now is to take our desires, and the desires often fall out of what's happening, and the perception is to us, and I want to change that perception to for us. Something in life is showing up, and it's nudging us. It's usually a little moment of compression that is nudging us into an expansion that makes us ask and shoot and have another new desire. Now we say, you know what? I don't like that anymore. This is what I really want. And now with this little exercise, you can now say, okay, now from this thing that happened that tweaked me, that triggered me, that hasn't been fun, I'm now going to create with consciousness. Now, one of the things that I talk about a lot is just bringing the simple act of conscious awareness. Conscious awareness to this thing triggered me, I don't like it. This thing, conscious awareness now, this thing is here for me, maybe. Jen said, maybe I'll play with that. Okay, so if this thing is here for me, what bringing conscious awareness now to, what is my new desire? My new desire is $1 million from what happened. It's like, okay, from this desire, how would that make you feel? And then that, and how would that make you feel? And how would that make you feel? Then you get to the place of actually feeling what it feels like to have it. And when you're in that place, you have the freedom now to lift your chin up to the horizon of your life, the horizon of opportunities, and see the opportunities that are right in front of you. I have this belief, and I've seen it to be true, that no one is given a challenge or a difficulty without the exact resources that you need to move through it. Life doesn't cage us. It only cages us temporarily so that we'll create a new desire and bring our conscious attention to what's next for us or what's ready to, or what we are ready to leave behind. And so the feeling of freedom that you feel in this moment is the place to now create from, to now look from, to now observe your business from.
Do you know that most people, when asked what they would do, pardon me, if they won the lottery, and let's say the lottery was millions, many of them would quit their jobs.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, that's not first on my list. I love what I do. Why would I leave it?
I know. I can feel that.
And again, everybody's choices are different. I acknowledge that. But, you have to ask yourself that question, why? What is it about what you do that you don't want to go back to? And so I'm just curious, in this exercise that you have just taken us through, it seems to me that an individual who says, if I won the lottery, the first thing I'd do is I'd turn in my resignation, I'd call my boss and quit, or I just wouldn't show up, whatever. Maybe you need to take a look at where you're at now, before you win.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, Richard. And here's what's interesting. I just recently we have a membership site where I do monthly coaching with entrepreneurs. And last month, two of them have jobs and are trying to extricate themselves to run their businesses. And they hated their jobs, hated them. And to both of them, I said basically the same thing. What if you left it? Because you know what you're going to do when you quit your job? You're going to take all the things you hate and bring it right with you into your business. It's not going to go away because life is here for us. So the compression that you're feeling at work, that's an opportunity to do it in while you're still getting paid. Mm-hmm. So I just said, go to work and find something that you love. What do you love about your work? And for one of them, it was their computer console. That's the only thing they could think of. Because the guy down the way was a bit of a bully. The boss was a kind of a jerk. And the environment didn't feel supportive. The only thing that she could think of was her computer. She loved her computer and how it was set up at her desk. And I said, so love that. And then it's the same kind of thing. What does it feel like to love your computer? What does it feel like to go in every day and love your computer? Just feel the love of your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was someone else who was starting a new job that was so bummed that she had to go back and get a job. And she hated working for other people. And I said, so do the same thing. Go into work and find something that you love. Feel what it would feel like if you're in a place of absolute service to these people while you're getting served by being paid a good salary. Both of them did that. 30 days later, they came back to the coaching call and said everything had changed, that the bully down the hall had been transferred. The boss completely changed her attitude towards her, and they've now become colleagues that now do brainstorming sessions. The whole department is shifting. She now feels she doesn't like the job necessarily because she wants to run her own business, but what she's experiencing now is a job that is now supporting her financially and gives her the freedom to now do her business from a safe financial place. The other lady also had the same experience. She has, for the first time in her life, is working a job that she absolutely loves, knowing that it is also doing the same thing. It's simply supporting her to have the financial safety net so that she can start her business. It's all our beliefs. We are run by our beliefs, and we change our beliefs ever so subtly, and then feel those beliefs within our being change. The surroundings really do transform. And it's not magic. It's actually quantum physics. When we change ourselves, the people around us change. If you talk to a psychologist, behavior modification. When we change, the people around us must change. It's just how it works. And it's a really, really cool thing to start to play and experiment with and shine the light of consciousness with. What's the worst that can happen? You go to work and you start liking things. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, I mean,
you'll start liking your job.
Well, and the thing is right now, some would say, right now the worst is happening. I'm still working at a place that I hate working. Okay, well,
right. Then
what have you got to lose?
Because,
again, if you lost the job, and this is something that I thought was real interesting, a story back in the late 1980s, early 90s, I was listening to. I only heard this story, this was a different thing. I heard this story, and I thought, isn't that? That, to me, that's interesting. Some might say irony, or I call them coincidences. Motorola was laying off 1,000 people from a particular plant. And the reason they were giving in the press release for the layoffs was the fact that over $1 million in materials had been pilfered from the plant. And they couldn't afford to keep these 1,000 people there. And the first thought that ran through my mind was, and how many of those people who were being laid off were pilfering from the company? And in a manner of speaking, they got exactly, karmically, if you will, what they should have.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
Yeah. And so when I think about 2008, 9, 10, and people getting laid off from their jobs left and right, and I mean, how many of those people, and I remember saying this to someone, they said, well, yeah, that's easier for you to theorize because you have a job. Well, so I should quit my job and then I can theorize? But I said, how many of these people hated their jobs?
Yes.
And now they don't have them.
That's right. And you can love your job. You know, I quit my job because I hated it. I really did. And I, within a year, I was almost a year to the day, almost. I was 10 days away from living in my car. I went through my savings really fast. I thought that, you know, I knew it all and that they sucked. And what I realized a year later is that I had a great job. I had a really, really great job. I didn't need to leave it. But for me personally, again, so that I could have this moment for teaching, I would have done it differently. I would have gone back and do exactly what I'm recommending. Find something you love. And I, you know, in hindsight, I can find dozens of things that I loved about that job. And interesting, what happened is that a couple of months later, I started my own freelance marketing business, and I had the best clients ever because I had that new perspective. I changed my beliefs that maybe I could have. Maybe it wasn't the job or the career or my boss. Maybe it was me. And what if I changed how I felt about the whole thing? Now, I didn't enjoy necessarily doing marketing anymore for clients. I was kind of past that, but I spent a year doing it, generating income that allowed me the financial space to then run my business, which then earned its first million within 18 months. Mm. So, you know, we have the opportunity here to really love what we do, even if we don't. And what if we just played with that? Mm-hmm. If I had changed it, I could have worked at that job and made, I was making great money, and used that job to then and not have to go through that year of really extreme hardship and almost end up homeless. And if I were to go back and talk to that part of me, I would guide me exactly this way. I know that I could have changed my perspective. I could have stayed there and had more security and still started my business. But yeah, our beliefs drive everything. These subconscious beliefs, and if we hate something, then it's going to say, okay, sure, I'll show you what hate is. Yeah, great.
Yes, it will. Yes, right? It will. You know, the thought just occurred to me, and I want you to expound on this, if it connects. That everything that you have described, children at play already do.
Yes. You nailed it. Damn, you're good, Richard. This is exactly right. I talk about playing a lot. In fact, in my program, Living Your Success Signature Business, the success signature part is that place of play within our being, within our heart. When we start to play, our life changes. When everything becomes play. And you're absolutely right. Children know how to do this naturally. When I was in the Amazon rainforest, so far away, I went to Ecuador this summer into the Amazon, and I was 500 miles away from a road, and I got to watch kids just play. Like, they didn't have any toys. They didn't have anything. And it was amazing. It was amazing to watch them. They had chores and stuff, and then once they got the chores done, all they did was play in between. And they just invented stuff out of nothing. They didn't have any toys. They had wood. Woods.
Well, there you go. And wood to make toys out of, so to speak.
Yeah.
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
Exactly. They created they've never seen a teeter-totter in their life, and they created a teeter-totter right in front of me. I said, hey, what if we did this and this? And they played with that for a while, and they started pushing. They had this competition game where they're pushing each other off the teeter-totter, and then they found that they did have a ball, and then they played soccer for a long time. No rules, just it was just amazing to witness them. And that's what we can do now as adults. That, you know, getting back to what you're asking about thriving and surviving, I think if we all started to just experiment with what it would be like if we played more in our life, and we don't have to go out and get a soccer ball. I'm talking about playing with your beliefs, asking what-if questions. You know, what if that guy that just cut me off was on his way to the hospital because he just got some bad news about one of his relatives? What if that's why he cut me off? That's an example of belief busting. What if nothing's going wrong in my life? What if I could actually like work? Those are all moments of play. Those are all moments that take us away from our mind and our brain and into our heart.
What about someone comes to you, hears all this, contacts you through your website, and we'll give that out in just a moment, and basically says, I have worked all my life. I've worked hard. I've worked long. I want mine, and I want someone to help me do it. Can you help them at all?
Absolutely. That's what I do. I think the reason why I love helping people just like that, and the reason why is because that's where I was. You know, I have this theory in my own program where I talk about our ideal customers, entrepreneurs' ideal customers, and our ideal customer is us. So you're describing me a couple of years back, you know, 10 years or so ago. So, I help people pull the paradigm of what they're being fed through society out and allow them to move into that place of their heart space, what I call the sacred chamber, and discover their own master. You know, years ago, when I was almost living in my car, I had this crazy vision. It came to me when I was, you know, desperately asking, what the hell? You know, I've worked my ass off for years, just like you just said. And here I am just about living in my car, homeless. What the hell? And what I heard this kind of inner voice that said to me, all your life you've been striving, you've been trying to reach outside of you for that proverbial brass ring. Mm-hmm. And the reality is what they said is, you are actually the brass ring. You are that which you are seeking. You are the gift. And the minute you understand that, the minute all of this will change. And, of course, that was the foundation of Success Signature. And from that moment, I made my first million 18 months later. And we are each the master that we are seeking. And in fact, I'm going to be so bold. I say this in the book. I'm going to be so bold to say that I am you speaking to you right now, that you created this moment. That might be a little far out. But you created me in this moment to say these words. I believe we live in a co-creative universe and that all of your audience is right now moving through me to share with them exactly what they need right now in order to make a transformation that they'll look back on in years and say, wow, I didn't know that I could be this new person. I didn't know that I could be happy and thrive and not just survive anymore. I don't have to recover anymore, that I can just thrive and be happy and blessed. And that doesn't mean, Richard, that life doesn't happen to us still. It doesn't mean that my sister doesn't pass away as she did several years ago, and I had to go through that horrendous heartache. But that, too, I also see as this powerful opportunity for me to have more compassion and kindness than I did before. All of it was here for me. Do I wish it never happened? Yes.
Sure.
I don't go through life saying, thank God my sister, you know, passed away. No, I don't do that. But I see the opportunity within everything now, and everything is here as an opportunity for me to expand and grow, become a better person, becoming more loving to me, which allows me then to become more loving to others.
I remember in one of these other personal growth programs I went through in the late 80s, early 90s, of a similar ilk but different group, and I remember my now ex-wife wanted to go. Now, my ex-wife was totally blind, so she obviously needed somebody to guide her through. Well, you know, I mean, I really wasn't doing anything in the evenings, so I'll take you. And we're sitting there, and the statement was made. It took me quite a while to accept. And the statement was that if you did not want to be here in this room, with these 30 or 40 other people, you wouldn't be. So obviously you wanted to be here because that's where you are.
Yeah.
And so someone listening to this program, obviously you wanted to listen to this program.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't, you'd be listening to something else.
Yeah, I believe you were called to this moment. And that, and it's not just because, it's not because of me, it's because of you. And that I am the voice that you've been seeking in this moment until it's another one.
Right. And again, I know that that does not come from a place of ego. I understand that. There's a great little book that I was given on my 21st birthday, which again, I still can't believe is 34 years ago.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Richard.
And it's called The Impersonal Life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautiful book.
You're familiar. Good.
Oh, my God. It's such a good book.
In fact,
Wayne Dyer was working on that exact book before he passed.
Yeah. There's one man that I never had the opportunity to interview. I really had looked forward to that. But that book was given to me, and I read it a number of times. And the gal that gave it to me, I consider my mentor back in Phoenix, she told me, she said that if I were told that I was going to be stranded on a desert island for the rest of my life, and I could only have one book, that, she said, was the book that she would take with her.
Right.
And I thought, wow, first of all, it's short as compared to some other books that some people might take with them. and yet the message is the same from one page to the next. And it actually addresses an interesting principle that I'd like to have you talk about. And we used to do a series of programs in 2014 called, it was still Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, but the subtitle was Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. And in one of those programs, my co-host, Will Lynn, surprised me by saying, we're going to have such and such a guest on, and we're going to talk about one of your favorite subjects, Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Only we're going to talk about one of the characters that you've elucidated on numerous times, the Borg. Now, some would say, who are familiar, why would you focus on the Borg? Well, I focused on them because, and maybe Roddenberry didn't plan it this way, the structure, if you will, and the connectedness, the network of the Borg is similar to the spiritual connection that we all share. I mean, think about it. Aren't you and I, Jennifer, in our maybe our times of meditation, what have you, we're listening for the still small voice to give us guidance in the direction that we should go and the purpose for our lives? But at the same time, we also acknowledge that my job and your job, though they may be totally different, somehow they work together in the grand scheme of things, the big picture, which we really can't see, right? So we're off doing individual things, but collectively, we're working toward the same goal. And that's, in a nutshell, the concept of the board. We're not out to assimilate anybody. You have to come to this place on your own. We're here to assist. We'll give you a hand up, you know, and so forth. But you have to be willing to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious as to how you feel about that aspect of all of this that we've talked about on the program today in light of who you are, Jennifer, as compared to the collective we, us, if you will, and that there is no separation, you know, that there are 7.5 billion people, and guess what? That's all us. They're all 7.5 billion reflections of each other.
You know, it's such an interesting idea and concept, and, you know, I'm a big Trekkie, so I totally get your analogy to the Borg. And that, you know, when Seven left the Borg, how it was tough on her.
Yeah.
I was shown another kind of vision of this. It was an analogous vision for me of each of us are these little puzzle pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And in the puzzle piece, we are definitely individuals.
Yeah.
We are individuated consciousnesses. And we are also, I personally believe that we are individual aspects of divinity. And that's just my personal point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that each puzzle piece fits into the puzzle that is humanity. That each of us has a role. Each of us is an important piece of this puzzle that is us. Bruce Lipton talks about this too, that he believes that we are each a cell in the body of humanity, and that once we figure that out, that together as in collaboration, we will be so much more powerful than we are as individuals. But the important part of it is that we are each individuals in this process, and as individuals, if we're using Bruce's analogy, the cell,
mm-hmm.
It has a very important, each cell has an important role to play.
Right.
So our individual roles are incredibly powerful. I think the collective was more a focus of the Borg, but the analogy works brilliantly when we also allow the individual aspect to be shined upon and honored and loved, and that we are part of the whole. All of it is true.
Yeah.
And from our perspective now, I think it's time for us, and likely that analogy of the Borg and the Matrix and all of it
mm-hmm.
have come out because we are being shown that that we have an individual perspective that is incredibly important as part of the collective. That when the individual can change, it really truly does have an impact on all.
And that each part has a responsibility, as James Redfield said in his book, Celestine Prophecy, to share our message. And going back to a Trekkie analogy, we cannot share our message with another part of the puzzle, if you will,
mm-hmm.
if our shields are up.
Yes.
Okay? And if our shields are up, we can't receive the message.
That's right.
So we need to put down our shields. We
absolutely
need to lower, and we need to become vulnerable. And I still love this. Okay. This is also another Trekkie thing where Data and Riker were speaking, and the episode was about trust. And mm-hmm. at the end of the episode, when trust had been violated, Data asked the ultimate question. So would it be better not to trust so as to avoid the hurt? To which Riker said, no. And so we need to stay vulnerable in that respect. And yeah, there are going to be people who are still in their self, their ego, who are going to want to take advantage, who are going to want to do all kinds of things. Let them.
Yeah, and you know what? It's so powerful what you're saying, Richard. I just love, I mean, we are so on the same page here, because one of the things I teach often is the greatest protection is the superpower of vulnerability and authenticity.
Yeah.
The superpower of it. So here's what happens. When we are truly vulnerable, we've let down our shield. Such a great analogy. We've let down this lie of protection. There's no such thing.
Yeah.
But being vulnerable in the moment allows us a greater vision. I call it this 360 degrees of bubble around us that we are now, that has proprioceptors, which are the receptors that tell us where we are in space, that the skin has. The skin has tons of these proprioceptors around it, and it tells your body where it is in space. Well, I believe that when we are in powerful vulnerability, when we are able to be super authentic, we create this bubble around us with all of these proprioceptors. So when someone is in their ego and coming at us from that perspective, we can feel it before it gets there. I'm not kidding. We can.
Yes.
We
yes.
can turn around and face it with authenticity and say no. I mean, I have a chapter in the Big Book of You. No is the new yes. Like sometimes yeah. it's really important to say no, and sometimes it's important to say look at someone and say. No, and sometimes it's important to say yes, and
mm-hmm.
and we don't have to use the ego and the mind's defenses of yeah, but
yeah.
and defensiveness. We can be powerful in our vulnerability.
I said that to a woman years ago, who was sort of a teacher for me at that time, and I remember we were conversing, and I was struggling through whatever it was I was struggling through, and she would explain, and I said, "Yeah, but what am I supposed to?" She says, "Do you know what a yeah, but is?" And I didn't get it. She says, do you know what a yabbit is? I says, no, what's a yabbit? Well, it's an animal with long ears and a fuzzy tail. And I'm just like, okay. And of course, I was still in my thing going, you're not really helping me with my problem here. Years ago, I finally got it and I realized, aha, okay. But it's one of those things that, you know, we slowly get it. And my brother and I had a great conversation. I've shared this a number of times on the program. We were at a family reunion. We were out walking. I was sharing with him my musings, my thoughts, and so forth and so on. And he turns to me and says, oh, geez, you're 33 and you're just now getting that? And it dawned on me, and I shared it immediately with him. I says, you know, it's not when I get it. It's that I get it.
Yes.
There's right. no timetable. There is you know, no timetable.
Yeah, do you know when we're actually really going to get it? When we get it.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Exactly.
That's when we're going to get it.
Yeah.
We're not going to get it a minute before that.
That's right.
And I talk about that with success, too. When's the breakthrough going to happen with my business? Exactly when it happens.
Yeah. And the timing. There's an issue of timing. When my wife and I moved here, my second wife and I moved here to Santa Barbara, we both lost our jobs. I knew mine was coming. She quit hers. And we're sitting there on March 1st of 2006 watching television. And, you know, she's really concerned. You know, she's very fearful of the future, not knowing what's going to happen because we're both unemployed. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I feel like we're on a precipice. And, of course, I says, well, of all of my experiences, all the people I've interviewed, the books I've read, the seminars I've been through, and so on and so forth, they've all said the same thing. When you come to the edge of a precipice or cliff, you do two things. You jump and you trust. And that's what we did. And that's why I find myself here talking with you, Jennifer McLean, about the Big Book of You, as well as your website, which is McLeanMasterworks.com, yep. and where people can get more information, not only about the book, but about a ton of other materials, as well as support and encouragement from the website itself and different workshops and so forth that are being held around the country. I mean, you're down there in L.A., and you're not far, so I would extend to you the invitation, should you make the sojourn northwestward up the Highway 101, stop in at Santa Barbara, and we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
I'd love that. I would just love to do that. I definitely, I have a friend up there, so I'll make a point of looking you up and letting you know when I'm coming.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up the program entirely, and again, a reminder that the website is McLean, M-C-L-E-A-N, McLeanMasterworks.com. And the book, again, is called The Big Book of You. And the subtitle is Spiritual Principles for Creating Your Life and Accepting What Is, folks. Three final questions for you.
Sure.
Who is Jennifer McLean?
Well, the word I come up with is a warrior for the light and truth and love.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to bring new information, sacred messages to the planet and show people the power and the light that they are.
And what is your life's purpose?
That's a good one. I'm a conduit and an amplifier to increase consciousness on a global basis and share the art, the joy of life mastery to all.
Jennifer McLean, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program and look forward to having you in studio in the not too distant future to talk further about this subject and other things as well. And wish you much success and those who come across your path as well, because I remember hearing this phrase that, and I actually took this on myself, that my purpose in life and working and doing the things that I'm doing is not to be a success. My purpose is to make you a success. In turn, I become a success.
Amen.
So again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's just been a delight. I've really enjoyed the conversation, Richard. You're awesome.
Thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.